Dogs seem to know everything about their owners, from their schedules to their scents to exactly what annoys us, or is that just you? I don't know. So shouldn't humans know everything about their dogs? Well, Embark's dog DNA test allows you to do just that. Getting to know your dog's breed mix and genetic health risks with Embark means strengthening your bond with your furry friend. And Embark founded the world's first canine relative finder. I have actually found distant cousins of Geo's. Anyway, we'll get there. They even offer you the ability to connect directly with other Embark dog owners in their database. We'd like to thank EmbarkVet.com for supporting And That's Why We Drink. And you can go to EmbarkVet.com to get free shipping and save $50 on the breed and health test with promo code DRINK. So Geo is quite a situation. All right, I got the Embark test done, and he is American Pit Bull Terrier. He is Shih Tzu. He's Australian Cattle Dog, Dachshund Chow Chow, German Shepherd, and Labrador Retriever. He is, as by the way, Embark put it, which made me so happy, he is a super mutt. Isn't that nice? I was thrilled because I had done a test on him ages ago, but it was like pretty simple and like kind of just not very, very in-depth. This Embark test was amazing. It told us that he was part Dachshund, which made a lot of sense because he's kind of like hot dog shaped. Get the dog DNA test that is trusted by millions. Right now, Embark has a limited time offer on their breed and health test for our listeners. Go to EmbarkVet.com to get free shipping and save $50 with promo code DRINK. Visit EmbarkVet.com and use promo code DRINK to save $50 today.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health, but you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Hey, boozers and shakers, we are coming at you live. We're so excited for a fall tour. It'll be the final installment of our current Here for the Booze tour.
The final, I think, 10 shows, something like that.
But something
The final countdown. And we're very excited. But if you want a chance at ever seeing Here for the Booze one last time, this is it, folks, before we do our next big tour. So hopefully you can make it to the next few cities. If you want to, you can check out our tickets at andthatswhywedrink.com/live.
We can't wait to see you there. Some shows are already sold out, so get on it quick. Bye. Okay, I felt like I need to start recording before we continued our conversation, Em.
Because
for some reason, the words that I said got jumbled in Em's head, and Em thought that the baby was just sitting in the bathtub alone.
Which, like, I was like, well, I wasn't
you
against
seem fully
it.
On board.
I was
for
not
what it's worth.
Not for a second did I think that was like bad parenting. I was like, we all need a break.
Yeah. I said, oh, if you hear the baby yelling, it's because Blaze put her in the playpen because he had to use the bathroom, and she doesn't like being left in the playpen by herself because she needs constant, you know, attention and validation. Don't know where she gets that from. Couldn't be me.
She got it from Geo.
Probably. Oh my God. I mean, actually, I thought you were going to make a joke, but that's actually probably true. Mm-hmm. And so I said, oh yeah, so she's in a playpen and Blaze is in the bathroom. And you were like, oh, so she's just sitting in the bathtub by herself. And I went, what is she? Did I say that? Anyway.
No.
So I think that's not what happened.
I think since I'm just getting diagnosed everywhere these days, I feel like I also need a brain doctor to check on me because I have noticed, and my mom always had it, and I used to make fun of her. And now as I'm becoming more and more like her as time goes on, I've noticed I'm now doing the same thing as her where words just completely get jumbled in my head. And
yeah,
I make
told
my,
me that.
I like make my own sentences and then I repeat them back to people and they're like, wait, what? How did you get there? And I'm like, isn't that what you just fucking said?
You've said that before. There was something we were talking about where it was like the gas station and you were like, yeah, I'm dropping my mail off at the gas station or something.
Yeah. Like it sounds like I'm fucking losing it. But my mom used to do it too. She always would make what you're referring to is she would always mix up grocery store and gas station.
That's what it was. That's
because
it was.
They both in her mind are categorized as errands that start with G,
sure.
And she just says whatever word vomits out first. But I feel like I say things like that, but I more often am listening to somebody and the sentence like gets like moved around. It's almost like it feels like a dyslexia, the way that people have described numbers look all mixed up. It's like that, but words. And I just hear completely different stories. And, then,
and
like,
it's auditory instead of visual. That's interesting.
Yeah, because I feel like there have been a few times where you're like, wait, how did you get that? And I'm like, I swear to God, that's what you just said. I swear to God, you just said that you put your baby in the bathtub and she just sat there alone. And I, by the way, was fine with it. But like, that's what I thought you said.
You seemed perfectly chill. So anyway, I just wanted to clarify that that point. But anyway, how are you? Why do you drink this weekend?
I have this shirt that I've worn in front of you probably a million and a half times. It's from Look Human, and it's the little cartoon house, and it says, "In this house, we respect pronouns." That was my second time getting that shirt. The first time, I forget what happened, but something happened and it got ruined. I think there were like holes in it over time, so I had to get a second one. I have to now get a third one because I had the same candle wax malfunction.
No, I was going to say, at least it wasn't the wax situation all over again.
And it's not I can just like simply iron out the wax suggestion that I got the last time. It's not that kind of situation. It's caked in wax.
What happened?
I literally, I picked up a candle and I was like, man, this smells really good.
You are such and a dope.
I picked it up too quickly and literally splashed my own face. It all hit me in the face. And I looked in the mirror afterwards. I literally just had like a face of wax and it was all dripping down my shirt.
What on earth? Was it worth the smell experience?
No.
But
the wax, the candle had been burning for literally hours. So it was just a thick pool of liquid
Dear
wax.
Lord,
and it just all hit me straight in my face.
That's an extremely Christine behavior of you.
I was just so shocked. I was like, I can't believe I just threw fire at my own face.
You just hurled it into your own face.
Yeah, and then I looked down at my shirt and I was like, there's no cleaning this. Like, unless I was like Betty Crocker or something from the 50s and only know how to mend all clothing.
But yeah, you know Betty Crocker.
You know her with her cakes and clothes. But other than that, I'd rather just throw the shirt away and start over. So that's where we are. Anyway, excellent. Why do you drink?
Oh, gosh.
Your baby's in a bathtub by yourself.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows what's going on there? Blaze is in a playpen. Baby's in a bathtub. We're all confused over here.
I swear to God that's what you said, Christine. I think you're gaslighting me.
Maybe it is. I might be. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm gaslighting myself. I don't know.
Sure.
But I got to say, Em, I'm a little freaked out because...
Why?
My Remicade is 2 weeks late now and they're still not getting it taken care of, and I've been calling every single day, and you know I hate calling anybody.
Yeah,
and
it's gotta
the
be
number
bad.
Of times I've made phone calls in the last 6 days should show them how urgent this is. And since I'm traveling to visit you this week to
oh,
work on some
shit
stuff together, I'm like, they gotta get me in by Thursday. So I am anyway
panicking.
I'm just kind of panicking. I'm sitting here with my phone on in case they call me.
Yeah. Are you feeling rumblings yet?
Yes.
God.
And that's the best way to put it is like rumblings where I'm like, oh, I don't feel right. And I'm like, that's not a good sign. Like
winds in the east.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. I don't know. I'm fine right now. I haven't had a drink since last Monday. Cause I don't want to aggravate it. You know,
I was going to say, do you know what your triggers are at least?
I think probably alcohol and pork, but I don't eat meat anymore, so that's out the window. But basically it's just when I don't get the infusion, so I'm like, hello people, ding dong.
What do, if you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to, but for people who don't know the experience, what do these rumblings feel like? Like, is it pain or is it just anxiety of what's to come? Or like what's...
Yeah, it's just like stomach pain. Not stomach pain, but it's like lower, like it's almost like cramps, but like tummy cramps, mm-hmm. I guess. And I'm sort of like, I know what it means, so it's not a good sign.
I found a sweatshirt. I still want to get it for you. I just can't find it online again. There's a lot of versions of it on like Redbubble and all that, but there was one in particular I wanted to get you with like the right font and design. And it says, I'm sure you've seen it a million times, but it was the first time I saw it. And it said, I'm having a tummy ache and I'm being really brave about it.
I've never seen that.
Oh, really? I assumed it would, like, your Crohn's algorithm would be like...
I would have thought, but no, I guess
but
not.
There's a lot of versions on it, but there was one that, like, had, like, a really, like, Christine aesthetic to it that I wanted to get you. But I also really want to get it for myself for general tummy aches, but then I felt like, oh, that's, like, appropriating your crone's experience.
So I think like, that's allowed. I think it's okay, you know.
I feel like I might get myself one for when I'm actually having a true tummy ache, and it'll be like a limited edition wear. Like, I'm only allowed to put it on in certain moments.
You should get one that says, I have a tummy ache and I'm not being brave about it.
That's totally true. Maybe I'll get like an ally shirt that says like, my friend's having a tummy ache, but she's being really brave about it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I stand now. So I'm just kind of like... living large, hoping it gets figured out. But after we record this, I have to call them again.
I'm sorry.
And say, please squeeze me in tomorrow.
Well, I'm trying to call to get like a psychiatrist ASAP, because with all the health stuff going on, my anxiety, as you know, has been more through the roof than ever. And so I'm getting particularly nervous about our shows, because if my anxiety was bad then, and this is like a version I've never experienced, I really don't know how to feel about anything. So I'm trying to, I'm already taking like, I have a Xanax prescription, but it's not doing anything, which is weird. I always thought like Xanax was like, everyone could be affected by Xanax
in
your system.
To be fair, you have an extremely low dose. You have like
that's true.
The baby dose.
But I want to talk to someone about adding to my propranolol cocktail. So
yeah,
that's where we stand currently. So
wow, listen, we're full of health problems. And ever since my neighbor was like, I listened to your podcast and it really was all about cardiac issues instead of ghosts, I was like, well, that's what happens here now, I guess. This is our new normal.
We should just do a spinoff podcast just about people's medical conditions.
We're so sickly.
At least, yeah, we could probably just cover most things on our own, but...
I feel like everyone's cheering right now. Like, yes, please, move this to another podcast.
Oh, hang on, my alarm just went off.
Good morning, Em.
Okay, stop.
What's happening?
I'm one of those people that has an alarm for every minute, and so I'm desperately trying turn them off. Well, because I had a feeling I might... fall asleep before we recorded. So
were you gonna say, oh, I need 15 more minutes to look at one more source and then sleep for another 15 minutes?
I would have asked for 15 more minutes, but it would have been a direct I'm still sleeping, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think I would have been honest about it. Who's to say?
Who's to say?
So you got engaged. Congrats. Now you may be wondering what's next. If you're planning a wedding, the first thing you need to know about is Zola. In fact, I actually shout this at any friends I have who are engaged because it saved my life when I was planning my wedding. Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place, including venue options and all your vendors. Plus, you can design save the dates and invites, build a free wedding website, create your registry, and stay on track and on budget throughout the entire process with their free planning tools. I tell my friends Zola is a one stop shop, right? This is the key to planning a wedding. I didn't even have a wedding planner. I used Zola and they were so helpful on every front. Everything from save the dates to a wedding website to online RSVPs to finding vendors. With Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place. From the day you get engaged and search for the venue to the day you send out your save the dates, make your registry, and even taste your cake. Zola has literally everything you need to make the whole process super easy and actually enjoyable. There's even a 5-star app that helps you plan on the go. Or on your couch. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like when you're hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/drink. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/drink. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/drink. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All my alarms are off. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to tell you a story, Christine.
I can't wait.
And I am sorry about your tummy. That doesn't sound good.
Oh, thank you. That's nice. I'll call them later and hopefully they get me in and then we'll forget about it for another 8 weeks.
Whee! Okay, so This is a tall tale is what it is. And this is the story of U.S. Highway 66.
Route 66?
It's a chunk of Route 66, yeah.
Ooh.
Sure, shall we just crack into it, I guess?
Yeah, I'm going to get this nice little chocolate. Look at this.
What is that? A chocolate? Oh, yeah, that's fun.
It's a chocolate little tiger. Also, there's pieces of... Sorry, my nail polish is so gnarly right now. Yeah, I went to a friend's baby shower yesterday, and they gave out these little treats.
Who's your friend?
Her name's Chelsea.
Is this a new friend?
Yeah, so, well, it's Renee's friends that I stole when Renee moved. Renee went to law school with Erica and Chelsea, and they live in Cincinnati, and then Renee moved to Phoenix, and I was like, well, I guess I'm taking these friends now.
Yeah, I'll take them over.
And I hope I'm allowed to say it, but they're both pregnant, and so I'm like... Bring on some friends for Leona, you know? So.
Does it feel nice to have like a little one up on them of like, oh, let me teach you the ways of motherhood now that I've got a couple months experience?
It does, because I'm like, well, one of them's pregnant with twins. So with that one,
bye.
I'm sort of like, I don't have a leg up on you at all. Like, yeah. Don't know what to tell you. Good luck. Yeah, but it is nice to be like, finally. Me. I can be useful, you know?
Yeah. I feel like one day when I have children, I will come screaming to you. But until then, that it's not a helpful source to me yet. But one day...
I put the baby in the bathtub. Now what do I do?
But you said it was okay. I put Allison in the playpen. We're good, right? Okay. So here is my story of Highway 66. So it starts in 1926... And this part of the highway was built. It's 193 miles long. And just this chunk that I'm talking about, I think.
Oh, okay.
It's 193 miles long from Utah to New Mexico. And also, as you're driving that path, you go through Arizona and Colorado and some of, like, the Navajo Mountains. So, it was the 6th division of historic Route 66. So when you put it together, it becomes 666.
Yes, it does.
So 6th division of Highway 66.
I see.
If you have somehow not been rattled by Christianity at some point in your life, you may not know that 666... you may not know that 666 represents the devil.
That's a cute way to put it. I've just been a little rattled.
We all have, whether or not you were shoved into it from childhood or you just like have been like on affected. The periphery.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've all been rattled a little bit, a little spooked.
A little bit. Good, bad.
Yeah. In between. Yeah. So yeah, 666 represents the devil. Apparently it's in the Book of Revelations. Couldn't tell you what that means. I haven't gotten that far in my Bible reading.
Read the Book of Revelation. That's the only fun one.
Oh, well. All right. See you there.
It's
then.
The one where like the world is ending and everything's like on fire and there's great beasts.
Well, yeah. Well, hey, that's the mention. There's a that's where 666 comes from, too. Mm-hmm. So you're onto something there. So Book of Revelations 13:18, the passage is, "Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man and his number is 666. And then there's like really no explanation as to why. So, which like I feel like is probably a lot of the Bible. But all we know is this arbitrary number 666 is associated with the devil. But they say it's because 999 represents God and it's upside down and therefore
Oh, well, I think I know why. I think it's 'cause 3 is the number of the Trinity and
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, maybe not. I didn't know about 9. When is 9 a number of God?
That's what I've been told. Again, I couldn't give you a full sourcing on the Bible.
I've heard that, but maybe.
Really? No. That's what I always, let me see. Let's see if we can do a
maybe,
quick glimpse
of it now. I feel like 7 is always a biblical number and 3, but maybe 9 is too.
999. The meaning of the number 999 centers around God's Holy Spirit, according to BibleStudy.org.
Oh, okay. So that makes sense why it would be 666.
I'm sorry. I am actually Christian today, and I knew something you didn't, which is interesting.
You sure did. I mean, I'm impressed.
Thanks. I hope it okay, feels good. Now I'm not. I thought that felt fun for 5 seconds, and I don't want to be a Christian anymore. Okay.
To be fair, you're the one who allegedly read the Bible already twice or whatever you said.
I read it once forever ago, but I realized a big chunk through that I wasn't actually retaining anything. So I'm trying again, and it's going just about the same.
Okay.
Okay. But anyway, blah blah blah. 666 means the devil. We don't know how or why. Your guess is as good as mine. So, just because of that, Highway 66, which has also been called Highway 666, has earned a reputation throughout the years as cursed. Mm. And the road itself, like, the conditions don't really help that reputation. It's, like, a pretty treacherous path. A lot of the edges are near a lot of steep cliffs, and there have been people who have died from that. There are long, 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 lonely stretches where, like, the only thing you can see is just whatever is ahead of you and your lights. If it's, like, pitch black out, it's just, like, it just feels eerie. Apparently, the altitude on this road alone ranges from almost 3,000 feet in altitude to over 11,000 feet. So
you just might be oxygen deprived and you just think that there's ghosts.
You might just be getting like spooked from like plain old hallucinations.
Oh, no.
Also, in like one particular 60 mile stretch, there's over 400 curves.
Oh, I get throwing up back there. I'd be puking.
Altitude sickness, car sickness,
nausea.
Imagine it's pitch black outside. You're like basically in the desert. You know.
Probably don't even have service to download our podcast out there.
Honestly, tragic.
Tragic indeed.
And so, yeah, it's like it's already a pretty spooky road, especially considering a lot of people are driving it by themselves. And so it's just got that air to it. And a lot of the lore comes from truckers who are driving on this patch of Route 66. And they claim that there are many entities on this highway. So, for example,
I love trucker stories.
Oh, I'll do a whole theme of that eventually.
That would be
then.
Great. We could even maybe do a listener episode of people who write in. I don't know how many people we listen to who listen to us are truckers, but I know a lot of truckers are podcast listeners, so maybe we have a couple out there.
Oh, yeah. Not all. No, never mind.
I felt like it was going to be really good.
Profound, yeah.
Profound. I don't think we're ready for it yet. My
brain started thinking, this is going to be great. And then a split second later, my brain went, don't say it out loud.
That I got to watch the progression happen on your face. Of just wait for this. Actually, never mind. Let's move on.
Something's wrong. I need to go to a doctor, I think. Yeah, something's happening
in my
brain.
I could have told you that, yeah.
So, so trucker lore, let's get into it. So one story is that very late at night, there was one guy driving on the road and he saw this glowing orange light coming towards him.
Uh-oh.
Very quickly, he realized that this glowing orange light was an 18-wheeler on fire barreling toward him. He pulls off the road very last minute and hears maniacal laughter coming from the truck. And when he looks back, when he hears the laughing, it's completely gone. Just
holy crap.
Has totally vanished on this very long strip of road that he should have been able to see something.
Oh, no.
So that's one story. Also, fun fact, there is an episode of Supernatural called Route 666 where there's a phantom 18-wheeler on fire running people off the road.
No way.
I think it's set in Missouri or something, but it's like, I mean, the same concept.
Same idea.
Similarly themed lore on Highway 666 is of an old vintage looking black car that has been said to be the reason for several unexplained fatal crashes along this road.
Oh, no.
So there's a lot of unexplained car wrecks. And I guess the theory every time is, it was probably that black sedan. because out of nowhere, you can like look in your rearview mirror, nothing, no one near you, no cars, you're by yourself on this road. You look back a second later and this black sedan is on your ass.
Oh, shit.
And it's like flashing its lights at you. It's trying to run you off the road. And even if you try to outrun it and like speed along, it will always keep up with you. And basically until it rams into you eventually. where it will smack into the back of you. Maybe it'll try to cut you off and sideswipe you, but it won't leave until it finally gets you. And then as soon as it gets you and you look around for it, it's vanished.
What the hell?
Isn't that fucking horrific?
What do you think the point of that is? Is that like...
I don't know.
I'm just
but
like,
I have goose cam just thinking
yeah,
about it.
It's creepy. I don't know why. Like what that would mean or like who that is.
It feels evil.
Yes, certainly.
Because I'd like to think like, oh, that's just a prankster. But like, that's a really fucking mean prank.
Yeah, a really murderous prankster.
Yeah, so eventually it just disappears once it's done its job, I guess. Maybe it's like reliving like how the person in that car died. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe it's Christine.
Maybe it is. I don't know. It's I can't say that's wrong. I don't know. There's another
ghost. You know
ghost.
What I'm referencing, right?
No, I just thought it was you.
No, the car.
Oh, was it James Dean's car or something?
No. It's a Stephen King novel and movie called Christine, which is about a killer car.
Yes. Okay. I only know about that because I feel like you're the only one who ever mentions that car to me.
Really?
Yeah. The only one. But you have said it before and I was confused then too.
You were like, who's to say? Maybe it is Christine. I was like,
I thought you were talking about yourself in the third person. You're like, maybe it's Christine.
Yeah, I get that one a lot. Like, ooh, like the killer car.
How many people are approaching you and saying
that? A lot.
Really?
It was a famous movie in the 90s and a famous book.
I'm sure if it was a Stephen King book.
It's like Carrie, like when people are like, oh, like, you know.
I see.
Similar idea.
Interesting. Does he have any other books that start with women's names?
Oh, that's a great question.
Is it just you and Carrie?
I only know about those two.
I wonder if he knew a Christine and a Carrie and he was like, they're fucking evil. I'm going to use that as inspiration.
Those bitches.
No, I am even shocked by myself that I don't know those references on my own because it's Stephen King and you would think, oh, a famous spooky situation. Yeah. I should know about that. It just goes to show you how far removed I am from a library, apparently. So
library. They did make a movie. I haven't seen it, though.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes me feel better. Maybe we'll watch that sometime.
Yeah, we should.
Okay, so sure. Maybe Stephen King wrote about this little ditty. And then
I'm just saying maybe this is the killer car, you know?
Honestly, it makes as much sense as any other theory to me. So then this is what I want you to really jump in on because you and Blaze have a story like this and I would like you to discuss it. The next common lore or spooky entity on these roads is that there is a lady or girl in white. She's called the lady in white and the girl in white, so I don't know which one she is, but apparently it's a barefoot young woman in a white nightgown, and she's seen crying by the side of the road. And sometimes she's been seen to like, she's crying as if she's like trying to desperately flag down a car. Or it looks like she got abandoned by another car and now is crying on the side of the road. Either way, she looks miserable by herself on the side of the road. And allegedly, those who stop to see if she's okay will then report that she vanishes in front of their eyes.
Creepy.
And many think that this spirit might actually be stuck here because maybe she was a hitchhiker who got picked up by the wrong person. And the theory is that she's buried nearby that patch of the road.
Ooh, that just gave me goose cam that she's like just waiting to be found. Oh, mm-hmm. God.
Might you insert your own story about the woman?
I forgot I had told you about that. I like didn't even realize I had told you about that.
It gets me jazzed. I think especially because like something finally rattled Blaze.
It really did. It was to the point where Blaze's reaction was making me scared rather than the other way around. So we were at the beach at like midnight. Okay, we were at
romantic.
Yeah, well, it was kind of gross and it smelled like seaweed. So we just took our beer and went home. but we were like, oh, let's go to the beach at midnight. It was we were like visiting my stepmom's house. She has like a house by the beach on the East Coast. And we were like, oh, let's walk to the beach and just like have a beer. So we went and walked to the beach. And then we were walking back at like, it might have even been later. It might have been like 2 a.m. I don't know. And we were walking home down this like, and this is a very isolated, like
I don't want to say desolate, but like very sparse area. There were like a couple houses, but it wasn't like a touristy area. It's not like a public beach or anything. And so we were walking back down this road, this like path through the wood, like it's almost like wooded on the side of the beach. And all of a sudden we like see this lady in a white dress, like probably 100 yards ahead of us. And we were like, where did she come from? Because there's no houses there or anything. We were like, where did she come from? And I was like, oh, she must have just, she must have just like wandered out and maybe she's waiting for someone to pick her up. It was so strange. And as we got closer, and there was no way, we had to walk right past her. There was no way like we could turn to the side or walk a different path or even turn around. So we were like, we just have to go past. And we were so scared that I remember I smashed my beer bottle on a rock because I was like, I feel like I might need a weapon. We were so afraid. And it was just this girl or like this young woman. And she was in a white dress and it was like two or three in the morning, just standing there staring straight across from her, across the path into the woods, just stood there the entire time. And as we got closer and closer and closer, Blaze was freaking, he was losing his mind. I've never seen him so scared. He's freaking out. And I was like, oh, I was the one trying to be rational. Like, oh, I'm sure she's just waiting for her friends. And as we got closer, she was fucking gone. Just vanished. We walked past. I turned and I was like, where did she go? And we had our flashlights on our phones, just like trees. Like, I don't know where she went. Maybe she saw us and like ducked behind a tree. I have no idea. But Blaze was like, let's get the fuck out of here. And we ran back.
That would almost make me run faster. Cause yeah, like now I'd be like, oh, she's hiding because she's like ready to like jump and get us or something.
I was more worried she was like dangerous. I don't know why. I mean, I guess just cause why would you be out in the middle of the night? But like,
I wonder if she was panicked about you and like
went and
started hiding when she saw you coming.
She's like, that lady's holding a broken beer bottle. Yeah. Like, of course she should be scared. But like, we did not see her again. And Blaze to this day is like, I don't want to talk about it. He was so scared. But it was creepy because she was in white. It was the middle of the night. She was just standing there.
It also freaks me out because like, obviously the worst movie in the world, The Strangers. There was like a very quick clip where like they weren't even, the killers weren't even doing anything, but they were just standing out in the woods, just staring at the house straight ahead.
That's the creepy. And it's just like staring.
It's like, what are you doing? And like, why? I have no idea.
That was what I kept saying. I was like, if she would just like look at us, like turn, glance our way, anything, I'd be less freaked out. But she's just staring straight ahead. Blankly and just like frozen in this white dress. And I was like, it is like 2 or 3 in the morning. It is cold out. She's just standing there in this like desolate part of the island.
And it's almost like you don't even want to open up the conversation to be like, hi, do you need help? Because then she might be like, I need help killing you. Like, I don't know.
I do. Step aside. Exactly. It was very gross. Freaky. I can't explain it. It was like one of those you had to be there because we were just feeding off each other's fear probably. But also, like, this was a really, we were on an island and it was like very desolate part of the island. Like, nobody was out there. There weren't houses there. We had walked quite a way to get there. So it's like, what are you doing out here at 2 a.m. on the side of the road by yourself? I don't know. It was spooky anyway.
Oi. Well, there you have it. There's
I'm getting my chocolate back. I'm
stress eating.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, besides in this situation, the girl in white that people claim to see on the side of the road, there are other phantom hitchhikers that people have seen that disappear in front of you. And some of them, my friend, do not have faces.
You know, I don't like that.
I want to find someone who does like that.
Okay, fair point.
Were you trying to be original there? Because can you imagine if I told someone, oh yeah, this person doesn't have eyes, and they're just like, yes,
you how know, cool is that?
And then they vanish in front of you. Oi. Okay, so no, this they don't have a face. Like, it's
I don't, a
blob of a face, I guess. And others have said that. So those other people that I just mentioned, they will see a hitchhiker on the side of the road, and then as they approach them, they'll vanish, including these faceless phantoms. Mm. But others have said that the hitchhikers will go so far as to straight up get in your car and have full-ass conversations with you. And basically, as you're driving, you will look over and they're gone.
That is freaky.
Now that I just certainly couldn't tolerate, especially as I'm operating a vehicle.
A vehicle? Like, no freaking way. It.
Some people, which I think is, if they have to be in my car, the kinder version is that people have said a hitchhiker got in their car and they had a whole conversation and then like dropped them off somewhere. And then they found out later that that was a fucking ghost. And so many other people have had that experience where they
kinder because you're not just in the moment sending me into an existential crisis. Yeah.
But then again, it's like, why do you keep getting dropped off at the same place? Like, just like maybe that was the last thing that happened
maybe
to them.
Maybe it's like the replay thing.
Yeah, but like, but maybe but if they had a conversation. Yeah, they're clearly reacting to your original words compared to somebody else.
Maybe they're just having, maybe they're just meeting talkative people and they just keep going, and everyone's like, no, we had a great conversation, but they're not self-aware enough to realize they were the only one talking.
I would like to know if all those people could get in a room and repeat the conversation,
yeah.
Because maybe the hitchhiker is just asking them the same questions.
Maybe the hitchhiker is creating the narrative there.
Mm. He's just carrying every conversation on his back, and everyone
what a
thinks
terrible way to live eternity.
Oh, so where are you driving? Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. So, okay, a lot of hitchhiker ghosts. Then there are theories about hellhounds hanging out in these.
Ooh.
I keep thinking the woods because that's all I know apparently about lone roads. But in this desert highway, apparently there are hellhounds, which are
yikes.
Satan's pets. and I guess aww. They are said to be seen in the middle of the night when your car breaks down and you're by yourself.
Oh, well, never mind. I was like, cool, if I see one when I'm passing through. But if I'm stopped, I'd rather not.
I mean, my toxic trait is thinking I would run into an actual hellhound and I could like he would like me. You
yeah,
know?
He would. It's like 100%. It's like I'm different.
It's like
he won't eat me.
I know you're here to drag me to hell, but like, have you experienced peanut butter? Because like,
I'm a dog person. I have peanut butter belly rubs. I don't see what could go wrong.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I've got a tennis ball in my car. You could go fucking nuts over that. But yeah, so this is especially a problem for people who are riding motorcycles down this road. They seem to have most of these hellhound experiences, mm-hmm. maybe because they're just like sitting outside and like can hear nature around them.
Mm-hmm.
I say as someone who's never been on a motorcycle, maybe they're just hearing a massive motor, but, I get so freaked out at the concept of being someone who rides a motorcycle. Cause like, what about when you're like riding home really late at night and you're at a red light and you just have to sit
with your feet
on the pavement like and hope no one comes and grabs you? I don't know. In my head, it's so creepy, but like I'm sure there's also the like stereotype that if you have a motorcycle, you're like bad and tough and no one's probably going to approach you. But like I would still be freaked the fuck out every time.
Oh, yeah.
Oy.
Especially when you stop and like the motor lulls and it's quiet. Not quiet, but like, you know, quieter.
Like you're just already outside. You don't even have the safety of your car. Anyway, they apparently motorcyclists experience it the most. There's actually one story that a bunch of bikers once got into a fight with these hellhounds. Like, so not even like being in a pack, like numbers didn't save you. Like just hellhounds came at this like whole group of bikers.
Oh, shit.
Apparently they lost their arms in this fight.
What?
Apparently the bikers got in a fight with hellhounds and they got their arms ripped off. And then in this same spooky story, one of the bikers got their faces bitten off by the hellhounds. But they were not dragged to hell, and thus it was a success.
Oh, good. Well, glad for them. But think about it. They got their face bitten off. Now there's a faceless hitchhiker. Just saying.
Oh, maybe those are all lumped into one situation.
Maybe those are the victims of the hellhounds.
Aha!
And they're cursed to spend eternity having meaningless conversation with drivers on
and
Route 666.
I'm convinced. Okay.
Yay!
And just like that, you're right.
look at me go.
Truckers have also said that hellhounds will straight up jump into your car.
Oh,
so, like,
okay.
if you think like, oh, well, I'm in a massive 18-wheeler, I'm safe from the hellhounds, apparently they will literally break through your windows just to get to you.
Oh, they will break through the window. It doesn't even need to be open.
Excellent. Yeah, they don't need to put their like cute little hellhound paws up and like wait for you. Like they're breaking through.
They're taking charge. Okay.
They are satanic, so it shocks me less. I just keep thinking of like a beagle or something.
Yeah,
but it's,
I'm like, that's so sweet. Oh no, yeah. I guess not.
Which also freaks me out because if I were ever driving on this road and found like an abandoned puppy and
like
now do I stop for the puppy? Like how sinister does this get? Are they tricking me to like?
Maybe they don't look innocent.
I don't know. Like, what if you saw a little puppy dog just limping across the road? You tell me I'm not going to stop for it.
As if.
I think hellhounds, if they knew that strategy would work, there'd be a lot more reports of them.
Maybe they are. Maybe that's who they are, and we're just all getting duped left and right.
Aha. Well, Gio is a little evil, and he
did come
from the streets. So
he came from the woods, though.
He was abandoned
in the woods.
I got to tell you, other than hellhounds, there's no other dog I've heard of that enjoys eating rocks, solid rocks, than Gio. So I wouldn't be shocked if he was part satanic. It just eats them like they're Tic Tacs. It's so creepy. Okay,
he's such a creepo. Talk about tummy ache.
I know. Well, okay, so here's the thing. They will jump into your windows. They'll break through the glass just to get to you in this lore. Mm-hmm. They're also known that, like, if you were to see one of them running across the street, or I guess if you didn't see one and you accidentally hit one with your car, it's said to leave, like, Hulk-sized dents in your car. But
oh, my God.
But the dog's fine. They just, like, run off as if nothing happened. So it's like hitting Superman. I wonder if that was someone who actually hit a dog, though, and just tried to cover up for it, you know?
Or just hit something else and was like, oh, no, it was a hellhound dent in my car.
As I drive and don't look back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez. Okay, so allegedly, other than hellhounds, people claim that there are other entities seen on the road, including what I will be renaming flesh saunterers. You see the synonyms I'm doing here? Flesh and sauntering, taking a stroll. Okay, so the reason I am changing up the word is because last time when I talked about Flesh Saunter Ranch, I did that episode a long time ago, people wrote in and kept saying that saying the actual word is like not that wise to do. Apparently, culturally, it is. In a lot of indigenous traditions, if you say it, it brings a lot of bad luck and they can hear you and you're summoning them. And a lot of people actually, I think, turned off that episode because they felt like by listening to it, they were experiencing some dark stuff. So out of respect, I'm renaming them, even though that feels like the wrong thing to do if I'm trying to be respectful. But I hope you understand where I'm trying to come from.
Sure. Yes.
Okay. So a lot of people claim that those entities walk up and down Route 666. And like I just said, apparently saying their name is very dangerous. It gives them power. And we're just not going to say the name. So people
feel like
can listen to the episode.
Sounds way more cursed than anything you've ever said on this show.
Right? It feels definitely like I'm not helping the situation.
No!
I can't think of another word for walker.
I mean, saunterer is not the part that's creeping me out.
I know. Well, okay. Well, flesh is the only word I can think of other than
epidermis.
Skin. Okay, the epidermis runner. Oh, no. Oh, okay. Never mind.
All of this is so bad and sounds like Ed Gein is involved all of a sudden.
Okay. Well, speaking of indigenous people, there have been some Navajo sources that have said that these stories of these entities being on the roads have actually been not accurate, and they are usually created by non-indigenous people for like content views.
Wow, shocking.
Yeah, so
how surprised I am.
Yeah, well, as I'm a non-indigenous person talking about this for content views, like I certainly don't feel that great about it, but I will use the platform to at least say usually if you're hearing about flesh saunterers, you know, maybe pay attention to what type of creator is talking about it, because usually a good chunk of it is lore that was just made up for the spook factor when like it's actually a really like sacred part of their practices. So there's actually a Cherokee writer named Dr. Adrian Keene who is quoted saying about these entities, they're connected to many concepts and ceremonial understandings and life ways. It's not just a scary story or something to tell kids to get them to behave. It's much deeper than that. Plus, as we've discussed before, there's a long and ugly history of involving indigenous beliefs into history to make it scary. And it's just, let's try to unlearn that, folks. So there's a chance that these beings have only been inserted into the narrative of this road because, especially because the highway is partly on Navajo land. So I'm sure that doesn't like help people bolster when it comes to bolstering that, that narrative. So anyway, if you hear someone saying that those beings are walking up and down the road, maybe fact check that. Now let's go on to probably your favorite part, which is the UFOs. People also, alongside all the ghosts, claim that there are either alien abductions happening on this road or some sort of dimensional rifts happening on this road. Because people often claim to lose time when driving on this highway. And to be fair, as I go into this, because this was my first thought, I was like, okay, well, it's probably just like a bout of like highway hypnosis where like you're driving on a long, long, long road and you're by yourself and it's dark and your brain is going to come up with things to entertain itself. But apparently that's, it's not that simple. There's one guy, he swears that when he was driving, quote, the air seemed to bend around his truck and light started flashing by him like he hit warp speed in Star Wars. And this went on for like 15 full ass minutes.
Oh, shit. So it's not like, oh, shake yourself out of it. Like it's still happening.
He was like he had 15 minutes to look around and be like, am I losing it? What is going on? This is happening. And like going at impossible speeds, thinking he's probably going to hit something. And then after 15 minutes, when it stopped and he went back to a normal speed, 3 hours had passed.
I mean, I would pay for that kind of technology to get me through a road trip.
That's true. You know? And maybe not as dramatic, but certainly something I still don't want to experience. Other people have claimed to lose massive chunks of time on this highway where you'll be driving and then in like the blink of an eye, it's dark out and you're almost out of gas and it's been 6 hours.
Nice that they wake you up before you run out of gas.
Yeah, but just barely. But like just maybe you'll make, what a crossover though if the aliens and the hellhounds got together because like you're almost out of gas and then you break down on the side of the road and then the hellhounds are there. Boy. So even passengers, not the drivers themselves, have experienced this alongside the driver where the two of them will be like, validation. Did you experience that? So neither of them can remember anything for the last few hours. And some swear that a minor event will happen right before this time slip. Some people have said that they see a green flash of light in front of them before they lose hours of time. And others say that their car broke down for a moment, so they pulled over. And within seconds, like the problem will fix itself. And they're like, oh, okay, let me get back on the road. And they realize that in those split seconds where the problem fixed itself, it's actually been hours.
That's
got to
be an abduction, right? An alien abduction.
Right? Like, I mean, first of all, it's in my mind, I'm like, oh, well, that's kind that they at least like pull you over to the side of the road before they abduct you. So they don't pull you out of a car going like 60 miles an hour. But it might be because like we've talked before about UFOs, like kind of making, like taking, absorbing energy from machines and breaking them down or something. So maybe you think your car's breaking down because it like got restarted or something by a UFO nearby, like fucked it up in some way. I don't know. But it feels weird that, oh, my car's breaking down, I better pull over. And then seconds later, your car is fine and it's been hours. Like, what?
I just imagine that that's implanted memory. I feel like people talk about like they were abducted and then they have some weird memory of things, like very, very inane things.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my car broke down and then it started. But like in reality, that's just like implanted memory to fill in that space.
Oh, okay. Well,
don't
next.
Like it.
Obviously, many people attribute this to alien abductions. And this also makes sense to me that, like, this is in kind of a deserty, desolate, remote area. So probably aliens can be a little crazier over there without getting noticed. And part of this road drives through New Mexico. So it's not far from Roswell if something's sure. going on there. If it isn't UFOs, people often think that they might be driving through some sort of vortex where they like go through this tunnel where the rules of time and space are different.
Oh, spooky.
So maybe they pop out on the other side and that feels like only moments to them, but mm-hmm. they end up at a different like jump point in time. Some people think that these time jump experiences, AKA allegedly driving through a vortex, they claim that they have gotten to a destination hours earlier than they should have.
Oh.
Because I don't know if that means like time stops, but they kept going right. or, you know, I don't know
or
how
if
it totally
they got
works
transported,
out.
Teleported. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So people will say that they will show up somewhere hours earlier and it makes no sense. But other people claim that it feels like time is frozen and they get places super late and they can't explain why either.
Ooh, those spook me. Those are creepy too, because it's like, where did the time even go? It's not like you can say, oh, we were just driving that whole time. Like, I don't know. Something about getting there late freaks me out, because it's like we lost hours and.
Because you can't even explain yourself to people later. Yeah. So then it's like it's an additional shame. Yeah. Like, I feel like I'm late all the time to things. And if I ever said like, oh, I was in a vortex, you'd be like, what?
I'd be like honestly, it's better than the usual like, oh, I needed one more source or whatever.
Right.
Like, I set I set an alarm for every single minute and a vortex just took me away.
You know what? Maybe that's why I set alarms for every minute, to rattle myself out of a vortex.
Yeah, you never know.
So there's one story of a girl named Rachel and her friend who were driving on Route 666 or Highway 666 when up ahead they saw a massive accident of like several fire trucks, several ambulances, several cop cars. So they pulled off and just like went to a gas station for a moment to, I guess, not have to sit in traffic. They ended up saying, all right, well, let's just keep going. And so they get back on the highway, maybe only like not even 5 minutes later. And there are no EMTs. There are no vehicles. There's no sign of an accident where they had just been. And so people think like, oh, maybe they blinked. They like blinked out of reality in some way. And like they were in a vortex and saw like another universe or
parallel
dimension.
Timeline. Ah.
Or maybe the ambulance and the accident, they blinked into our reality for a second and then they were gone. So maybe like the vortex works both ways. Maybe they had like some sort of glitch in the matrix where they saw something from the past or something that hadn't happened yet, maybe.
Right.
Which is super creepy if like, oh, you saw a future accident. I don't know. But I mean, apparently it was fast enough that there's no way everything could have just... they could have just driven away and there'd be no sign. Like, there was no rubble on the ground from an accident, nothing.
That
so it
is
was
so weird.
Super creepy. So in recent years, Highway 666 is said to be much safer to drive and it's been renamed. One reason was to avoid talk of it being cursed.
Sure.
Just in hopes that the energy would not be there anymore.
Well, and once again, if part of it is on Native American land and you're calling it cursed, like, that's also, let's like move away from that. You know what I mean?
Which brings me to the next point, that another reason was because linking this road to evil when it passes through Navajo territory was not a good look.
No.
And one woman named Laverta Washburn of the Navajo Nation, she actually also lost a bunch of her family members in accidents on this road.
Oh, no.
And, like, also I can imagine there's some, like, shitty, ignorant person who's like, oh, maybe it was a monster on the road. Like, someone could have said something so fucked up to her. But at the end of the day, as someone who is, like, indigenous and had people die on this road and has had to grow up hearing all of the lore, she was quoted saying, every day Navajo people use this highway to go to work, to go to school, to go to the hospital, and yet it's named after something evil. It's the symbolism that's important. So the governor said, for years the Navajo Nation tried to get rid of this highway's number, and no one ever listened. So what we are doing is a long time coming. So on top of just changing the name and number, they have expanded it into a four-lane highway. So it's bigger. I don't know why. It sounds like it's a highway that doesn't always get a lot of traction. Maybe that was just from several years ago in the past, but they've expanded it to a 4-lane highway. And it's had other safety improvements done to it. And it's now named Highway 491.
Oh, two of my lucky numbers.
Yeah. I don't know how they picked that. I don't know if there's like a highway protocol or something, but
yeah.
Anyway, 491. So that's,
maybe those are the least satanic numbers they could come up with.
Technically, shouldn't it be 999?
999, yeah.
Anyway, that is the formerly called Highway 666.
That was a great story, and I got a couple bouts of goose cam. And I want to say, too, there was a story on Jim Harrell's campfire that I don't remember what road they were driving on, but they were definitely on a road trip, and they were driving from West Coast to East. So it might have been Highway 66 on a different stretch. I'm not sure. Hmm. But they were talking about, it was such a like wild story. And they even said, like, I know this sounds crazy, but like, you know, I'm a very science minded person, blah, blah, blah. But they were driving down this road and all of a sudden they saw dinosaurs. They were like, it was as I know. And she was like,
what?
It was as if I got like transported into like a for just a few seconds. Got like put into like a totally different time.
Just
like flashed back to the normal road. And she's like, I wasn't sleeping. Anyway, obviously I'm not doing it justice, but she was like, I think she had like a doctorate. Like, she's like, I'm not a dummy. Like I was not hallucinating.
That's so fucked up. Oh my God.
But she said something like, it felt like she got sucked into like a time warp and all of a sudden there were dinosaurs. And then she got like,
that's wild.
Back to normal.
It's one of those things where part of me, before I like think about it, I'm like, man, I wish I'd have something like that. And then I'm like, no, I don't. What
it
am
would
I talking
fuck me
about?
Up forever. I feel like, yeah, I would never recover from that.
Also, I really want her to be friends with the paleontologist, so now she can go up to like look at the bones and be like, that's not how it looked in real life.
That one's backwards. Yeah.
Can you imagine the dinosaurs who saw her for a second and were like, what the fuck is that?
But that's what I always think about when it's like, oh, I saw a ghost from the colonial era. And I'm like, they probably saw a ghost from the future and were like, what the fuck are you wearing? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I imagine seeing a fucking car and you're a dinosaur and you're like, that moves by itself. What's going on?
That's one weird looking dinosaur. I don't know what I would think, but it is fun to imagine.
Wow.
Anyway, so I don't know if that was on the same road, but the way she told it was obviously much more poignant and scary, and I just probably butchered it, but it was very, like, alarming, because you think, oh, well, if you go through a time warp, like, why wouldn't you go back to a million years ago? You know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't you go back to a time when suddenly there are dinosaurs there?
It's kind of the same concept of where everyone, like, there's that meme of, like, how come all the ghosts are from the 1800s and not, like, a 2007 Britney fan? Uh-huh. Like, but it goes in reverse. Like, how come everyone has like jumps into glitches in the Matrix that are only like 100 years max away? Like, why isn't there a medieval Renaissance glitch in the Matrix or something?
Great question.
You know,
it's harder to get. It's too far removed.
Yeah, I wonder if eventually, like, even your soul kind of fades out of existence. Like, I wonder if in the 1800s, they were only seeing, like, 1700s people.
Mm.
And then after all those people died, the ghosts were like, damn, even the people that could see me are dead now. I guess I should move on. Like, I wonder, like, eventually, are there just going to be no ghosts from the 1900s and you're, like, 2500, you know?
That's a great point, Em.
Because I never see a ghost from year 3, you know? So, like, where'd they go?
Wow.
There should be ghosts of cavemen.
I know, but there weren't that many of them, right? And
there was at least one. Someone. You would think a museum full of, like, cavemen memorabilia. You'd think, like, some.
Yeah.
You'd think, like, some caveman tchotchka has an attachment. And yet I've never seen a fucking caveman in a museum that wasn't a statue.
Okay, but you don't see ghosts every day. Like, maybe somebody has seen a caveman ghost. And
you know what? we are so lucky that we have so many listeners, and every time you've ever made a request during listener stories, we're like, I want a cowboy episode. People just flood our emails.
Okay, Mr. Armchair Ghost.
And guess what? People flooded. It worked. Somehow there are armchair ghosts, enough of them to do a whole episode on. Mm-hmm. And yet, I think the one challenge no one can accomplish is caveman ghost stories. I think we would not get a single email.
Okay, I just feel like if you're looking at this statistically, the number of people that have existed since then are so much higher than the number of people that existed during caveman era. So like the odds of seeing a caveman ghost are so much slimmer.
Okay, but here's the thing then. Imagine you're in like year 100 or something. Mm-hmm. Like those people should have, if they're seeing ghosts, they're only seeing caveman ghosts, yeah?
No, because the year 100 was not when cavemen, that was after Jesus died, allegedly.
That's fair. Okay. Which, by the way, does that mean in year 1 AD, did anyone see Jesus's ghost?
Wait, hang on. No, he was born in, okay, forget it.
After death, right?
No, Annus Domini, the year of our Lord. Okay, here we go.
Oh, fuck.
So, hold on. I've heard of people seeing ghosts of like Roman soldiers and things, but obviously that happens in Italy. Like, what are we?
I see where you're going.
What I'm saying? Like, yeah, I guess if you're in like colonial America, you know, maybe you're seeing colonial ghosts, but like you wouldn't be seeing a caveman Burbank.
You are totally right.
So I don't know. Maybe it's just the place that makes the difference.
All right. In that case, we need to go to the place that had the most cavemen per capita, and then we just sit on it okay. and just per hope capita, for the best. Yeah. Okay, you make
we'll
some
go
good
back
points.
To
you...
Year 100 AD. God, every history major listening is like having an episode.
Does it really? I always thought BC was before Christ and AD was after death. That's not
true.
Year
of our Lord.
Oh.
Wait, no, because then he would have died at age zero. That doesn't make any sense.
You're totally right. Why didn't my brain always think that? I don't know. We don't really need to think. We don't need to sit on that.
Why did my brain think that? That's a very loaded question that I don't feel like I have the authority to answer.
Hey, whatever. Everyone who's thinking, wow, Em's an idiot. You know what? You're right. And I'm fine with that.
I'm not going
to lose sleep about it. It's okay.
That's all that matters.
I'm totally fine with
I feel like
the bed
I was also taught AD after death, but I don't think that that's correct. I think that's just one of those like things people assume and then nobody corrects it. Do you know what I'm saying?
As someone who knew that 999 meant the year of our Lord, yeah. I'm going to say that it cancels out today.
You should have quit on a high. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Tell your story so everyone can forget this whole experience.
And That's Why We Drink is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With Squarespace, it's easy to create a beautiful website all on your terms. You won't want to miss Fluid Engine. This is a next-generation website design system from Squarespace with reimagined drag-and-drop technology for desktop or mobile. And I'll be honest, this is a game-changer. Back when I made the And That's Why We Drink website, I used Squarespace. This was obviously well before they were a sponsor, and we have used them ever since. And it's unbelievable how easy this tool is. Any of us on the team can log in and move some things around, update things. We don't need like a dedicated webmaster to figure it out for us because it's so accessible. I love Squarespace. I've made many websites with it before, and it's really easy to get started. You can get one of their Squarespace professional website templates to use. They have designs for every category and use case. Then you can customize your look, update content, add features to fit your unique needs. It's just a really, really cool service. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/drink to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. You've probably heard about Burrow. It's a new kind of furniture company known for timeless design, durable materials, and details that make life in your space easier. Last year, they brought their expertise outside with the launch of their outdoor line, and now they're adding more must-have pieces to the collection. Dunes offers seating, dining, and lounger options, while Scout is a new folding chair upholstered in a chic woven fabric. Made of durable materials made for all seasons, weather-resistant teak, stainless alloy, quick-dry, stain-resistant cushions, love that, with easy assembly and disassembly. They also just launched a new standing desk co-pilot with adjustable height, a durable scratch-resistant body with built-in storage to make working at home easier than ever. And of course, there's Burrow's legacy seating collections like the Nomad and Range, now available in new colors. So no matter what you choose, you always get free shipping on every order, which can run up to $100 for larger items. And that is a win. You know, Em and I love our Burrow. And now that they have outdoor furniture, I'm very excited to get my lounge on. We have this balcony and I am always looking for something to make it comfy, but also look chic, you know, because it's outside. Everyone can see it. And I want to look stylish while I'm bird watching. I love Burrow. It's easy to assemble. It ships free. I can't recommend them highly enough. And that's why We Drink listeners can get 15% off their first order at burrow.com/drink. That's Burrow, burrow.com/drink for 15% off. burrow.com/drink. All right. Well, if we didn't have enough headaches on our minds today, I'm going to bring you an unsolved mystery, okay, for you to really
scream about
and turn and scream about.
Yeah.
This is the story of Angela Hammond.
Okay.
And this was featured in an episode of Unsolved Mysteries, season 4, episode 16. So a lot of that information comes from that. So in the Unsolved Mysteries episode that covers Angela's disappearance, the host said, "For every mystery, someone somewhere knows the truth." So I, for one, am still hoping, like all unsolved cases, that somebody has a moment and says, "Hey, I know something," or confesses, or who knows. But we can only hope. So Angela was born February 9th, 1971. And this takes place in the year 1991. So she's about 20. And she lived in Clinton, Missouri. And now this is a small farming community with a population of about 9,000. And I was reading this the other day, and I rolled over to Blaze and I went, "Don't your grandparents live in Clinton, Missouri?" And he was like, "Yeah, why?" And I was like, "That's where the story takes place." And he goes, "Are you sure it's a really small town?" And I was like, "Yeah." Whoa.
Did the grandparents remember that?
No, so they actually didn't move there till later in life. So, because my mother-in-law's from Missouri, but she didn't grow up in Clinton, but that's where they moved later. But yeah, so kind of weird because it's like a small farm. Like they have a farm out there. It's like very rural. So it's just a weird coinkydink. That's all.
Gotcha.
But I've been there. Gio loved it. He met a horse for the first time.
Oh, did they get along?
Well, he tried to bite its ankle and then I had to drag him away so he didn't get kicked in the face. And then he walked directly into the lake and I had to pull him out because I don't know if he would have figured out how to swim. So he really is not built for the farm. You know, he's a city dog. He's not built for the farm.
I feel like anyone else would see a living creature 20 times their size, and the last thing they do is try to hurt it.
100%. He's like, "I'm going to attack that thing." And I was like, "I wouldn't if I were you. Really wouldn't."
I would openly be like, "You are the alpha in the situation. Absolutely. It's time for me to backtrack over here."
Absolutely. Gio's not known for being, you know, humble or understanding his place in the world.
Always takes on a challenge, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. He won't back down easily. So anyway, Angela in 1991 is living in Clinton, Missouri, the small farming community. She worked at a bank. She attended Central Missouri State University. And her family, the Hammonds, had lived in Clinton for 3 generations. And Angela was nicknamed Angie. She was well-known. She was well-liked throughout town. She was charming and outgoing. Just one of those classic people you see in one of these TV shows where it's like she lit up a room, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She had started dating her boyfriend, 18-year-old Rob Schaefer, in November of 1990. And apparently, Rob was a local celebrity.
Okay, Rob.
I know, because he was a celebrity athlete in town. He was like the small town, like a superstar, you know, going places.
If you're a celebrity athlete by 18 in a small town, I'm just going to take a stab in the dark and say that he was the quarterback of the high school football team.
He played volleyball. No, I don't know. I assume it was football. It seems to be the most likely scenario.
In a small Midwest town. Yeah.
Yeah, precisely. But so he was a senior in high school and he planned to enlist in the military when he graduated. They'd been dating for a while. And 2 months into their relationship, January 1991, Angie had found out she was pregnant. So Rob proposed to Angie with a diamond ring. They were so excited. And Angela's mother, Marcia, said Rob promised Angie he'd always be there to take care of her
He felt very protective of her. They loved each other deeply. They were very excited about this baby and about their engagement. And then everything goes wrong. Okay. Oh. Just, oh my God, this story is so wackadoo. Okay.
Oh.
April 4th, 1991, Angie and Rob, so she's a couple months pregnant, Angie and Rob went to a barbecue together in Angie's car. Afterward, she dropped him off at his house where he lived with his family at 10 p.m. on her way to visit her friend Kyla. She promised to call him later. Meanwhile, Rob was babysitting his younger brother and planned to meet back up with Angie when his mom came home. So this is the timeline, and this just becomes important because there really aren't many more clues than this timeline. So just a little over an hour later, at 11:20 p.m., Angie called Rob from a payphone about 7 blocks from his house in the center of town. She said there was a vehicle that kept circling around the block while she was on the phone. Hmm. Rob later reported that it was an older model green Ford pickup truck, and Angie hadn't recognized the truck or the driver, so Rob was like, oh, it's probably somebody who's just from out of town and is lost, so don't worry about it. Well, then the driver parked at the phone booth, and Angie told Rob the driver is getting out of his car and coming toward me.
Oy.
She said he's dirty, he had a mustache, scruffy dark hair, a beard, and wore overalls, eyeglasses, and a baseball cap. The man tried to use the payphone next to Angie, got back in his truck, and started searching for something inside with a flashlight. Because remember, it's like 11:30 at night. Rob told Angie to ask if this guy needed to use her phone. Like, maybe the other phone was broken and this guy was just trying to use the phone. She asked, hey, sir, do you need to use the phone? I can get off this one. And he said, no, thanks. He'd try the other phone again in a moment. So Rob got uncomfortable and said, hang on, I'm going to come meet you. And she's like, no, no, it's fine. It's not necessary. They went back to their conversation. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Rob heard through the phone, Angie began screaming a blood-curdling scream. And then he heard a man's voice say, I didn't need to use the phone anyway.
Yeah. So, oh, fuck.
Rob dropped the phone, didn't even hesitate, leapt into his car and raced toward the town square. Again, this is only like 7 blocks from his house. On his way there, he sees the pickup truck passing him, going the other direction. And Angie saw him from inside. She screamed Robbie at him from an open window.
Holy shit.
As the vehicles pass each other, he did a U-turn and began chasing the truck. They went down the main road, passing through the town's business district. There were buildings all around. There were some people out. But, like, nobody knew why they were chasing each other through this town square. So nobody really thought to do anything. So Rob was right on the abductor's tail, like yards away, seconds away from rescuing Angie. Unfortunately, obviously, this was not the era of cell phones yet. And so, you know, if he had had a cell phone, he could have called the police and like had this, you know, sorted out. But it was 1991. The two of them were on their own and the clock was ticking. Rob, when he had pulled this U-turn, he had turned so violently that he basically destroyed the transmission of his car. And he was on the abductor's tail for about 10 miles when his car died in the middle of the road.
So he just had to watch her just drive away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Did he get the license plate number?
So that becomes a point of contention. He says he was on the abductor's tail for 10 miles. He said the truck was about a 1969 or 1970 model, and there was a decal covering the entire back windshield, which looked to be like a fish jumping out of water, some sort of like big vinyl sticker of like a fish jumping out of the water. And as his car died, he recalled later in an interview, all I saw was his brake lights and dust. Ugh. And the hardest thing to cope with, for obvious reasons, is knowing he was close enough to get them, but didn't get the job done and just had to watch as they drove away. It's just like the most jarring, horrifying thing. So the people of Clinton were in shock. So there's this website called crimegrade.org where they like mark how dangerous and how likely a place is to have violent crime. And Clinton is only in the 27th percentile, meaning like 73% of cities are safer and 27% of cities are more dangerous. So Clinton gets a D minus for violent crime. So
Wow. It
is considered more dangerous than the average U.S. city. We don't know what the score would have been in 1991. This is a more recent number. So, you know, there's no, that just shows like maybe how likely it is to have had some sort of violent crime. But this kind of thing, somebody just grabbing a woman off the side of the road and driving away, was still basically shocking to everybody in town. Oh, especially because it's such a small town and they knew her.
Yeah.
So police and hundreds of local volunteers set out to find Angie, both on land and by air, but they could not find any signs of Angie or her abductor. So the first thing, you know, Rob told police about the fishing scene he had seen on the back of this truck, this like big sticker. And so investigators were like, okay, well, let's look at fishermen who drive on these rarely used back roads to access fishing spots. They, you know, went through and interrogated anyone they could come across and ask if they knew anything, and they just couldn't really get any firm leads. So they found Angie's car by the payphone still. Her purse and her money were still inside the car. So there's this thing called the Missouri Rural, it's really hard to say, the Missouri Rural Crime Squad, which is made up from the cooperation of multiple counties' investigative forces. And they asked the public, this is kind of a twist on things, they asked the public to search their own land and their own barns and abandoned houses.
Oh.
Because, you know, usually makes it's sense. Like, oh, the police would search. But yeah, it makes sense because if you have a lot of land and you have barns, like, you know how to search that more thoroughly than authorities would.
Plus, it's like, so, get the town to help cover the scene.
Yes, or cover all that land. I mean, yeah, exactly. It's a very rural area, so there's just like tracts of land and, you know, abandoned barns, things like that. So people were investigating their own land to see if they could find any sign of Angie. Property owners individually searching would be way more thorough than police searching every single property. And authorities actually offered a $6,000 reward for anyone who could find any information, which nowadays is about 13 grand.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, nobody found anything. So that did not go anywhere. But the State Highway Patrol did produce a list of 1,600 possible vehicles matching Rob's description. They went through all of those and nothing, no car they looked at, nothing produced any more evidence. So now with no other evidence and no witnesses, Rob became a suspect because he's the boyfriend. You know, he's the last person who talked to her and he's the only witness. So, of course, they're going to look at him. Interestingly, Angie's mother didn't think for even a minute that Rob had anything to do with this.
That's good.
Yeah. So she really fully trusted him and she had known him since childhood. But she calmly said in an interview that she thought it was natural for people to question Rob because, quote, did the boyfriend do it type thing is a common, you know, way to look at an investigation. And within a week, Rob was cleared. So even though his story was pretty far-fetched, it seemed to check out.
That's good. Okay.
Meanwhile, statewide media urged women to be careful. Ominously, the Springfield News Leader, the same paper that would later write reports on the disappearance of the Springfield Three only a year later, published a headline, "Caution Needed for Women's Safety." And then a year later, the Springfield Three happened, and they were the ones reporting on that as well. Very ominous. So as the investigation wore on, papers ran with the theory that maybe there was a serial killer loose in the Ozarks. And investigators told newspapers they were considering that Angie's abduction might actually be related to two other women's cases. So that same year, 1991, in January and February, 42-year-old Trudy Darby and 30-year-old Cheryl Kenny, who were both convenience store cashiers, were abducted at work. So just in public, doing their thing, were both taken from work. And like Angie, Trudy called her son to report a suspicious man in the parking lot before she was kidnapped, which is just so eerie, you know?
Which is, I also like, I wonder what really was the, I don't know what the right word is, but like, what was the aha moment or the X factor that made them so suspicious? That, because I feel like a lot of times it's someone who's kind of unassuming and you don't know. I mean, there's also really creepy people out there. But, like, I wonder what they saw that, like,
what
really
struck them. Yeah, what the activity was, the big red flag.
Yeah.
You know, and I think with Angie, it seems like she's on the phone and this guy's just circling the block over and over. So that makes sense. But I wonder
if it's, you know, and I feel like this is my moment to pitch my favorite book again that I occasionally bring up, which is The Gift of Fear by Gavin De Becker. And he talks about this gut feeling, and he, you know, mostly mentions women in the book just because they're mostly the victimized ones in crimes like this. But he talks about like how, I just reread it recently, but he talks about how there's something in you oftentimes that will tell you a situation is wrong and you won't even consciously know why. And I get goose cam every time I talk about this, because like one of the examples is a woman who went into her house, or I'm sorry, her apartment building, and this guy offered to help with the groceries and helped her carry them upstairs. And long story short, he ended up assaulting her, and she escaped and, you know, made it out. But looking back, she was like, I knew something was wrong. Alarm bells were ringing, and she didn't realize why until later. She realized when she came into the apartment building, she never heard the lock click. So she never heard somebody come into the building, which means he was waiting inside. And so just things like that, where your brain picks up on it, even though you don't consciously know why, but your brain is like, alarm bells, alarm bells. And that say, I think it was the same woman said, he told her, hey, I'm going to let you go in a minute. And then he closed the window and walked out of her bedroom. And she said, she said her fear like overtook her whole body. She barely even controlled herself. And she followed him down the hallway naked and ran out the front door into her neighbor's apartment. And she realized later, like, even though he said, I'm going to let you go, he had shut the windows. And she was like, I think my brain subconsciously knew he wouldn't be shutting the windows unless he wanted to, like, anyone hear anything if he was going to kill me. Like,
oh my God.
He was closing the windows, even though he was saying, I'll let you go. He was closing the windows to, like, prevent anyone hearing outside. And so things like that, where it's like, you know, if you feel like something is off, your brain might know something that you don't even realize. Your intuition, quote unquote, your instinct might be like, there's some red flag, but you're not even consciously aware of what it is. So I don't know. It's a great book. I recommend it. And it teaches you to kind of, you know, trust your gut, so to speak, on this kind of thing. So anyway, yeah, speaking of the red flags, who knows what the suspicious activity was, but it's just scary that they saw it coming and then it's still happened. You know what I mean?
Oh my God.
Okay. Anyway, sorry for that tangent. So anyway, back to this. So these two women had been kidnapped earlier that year at work, and Trudy had called her son to report the suspicious car. Unfortunately, her body was found in a river several days later. She had been shot twice in the head. They never found Cheryl, so that one is still unsolved. And despite no solid links between the women, investigators were like, well, they're close together. They're around similar ages. Maybe they're related somehow, these crimes. And then two men eventually were convicted of Trudy's murder in 1996. And they could not connect these guys to Angie's disappearance. So it doesn't seem like they were related.
Okay.
On April 21st of 1991, which is 17 days after Angie's abduction, the Springfield News Leader ran an article announcing that the multi-county crime squad was calling off the investigation. The squad had this rule that they would only remain on an investigation for 5 days unless they hit a lead, and that would kind of further along their investigation. But they had no leads. They had nowhere to go, so they were giving up, so to speak. And the case fell back on Clinton City Police, Henry County investigators, and the FBI. And one investigator was quoted in the article saying, we have no evidence to indicate that Angela is not alive, but sometimes with this much passage of time, you wonder.
Jesus.
Which is very depressing. Over time, the investigation slowed to a stop. There really were no leads, no clues, basically no hope. It was sort of like Angie had vanished without a trace, except Rob had witnessed her being taken, and then she had vanished. Like, it's just like,
and like
totally dead end.
I mean, obviously it's an unsolved mystery, aka we don't get any closure at the end of this, but thank God that he even saw it. I mean, she could have just gone fucking missing and no one would have a lead.
That's a great point. Yeah, and it's sort of like a double-edged sword, because on the one hand it's like, well, good, he saw that, but then on the other hand, now he has to live with that
trauma and guilt of like, I could have done something, even though obviously he couldn't have.
I think either way he would have thought, I could have done something, but at least this gave him like, also like, that's a good PSA for see something, say something, because they were on the phone and she was like, dude, this guy's being fucking weird. Because even if it ultimately never got us answers, it definitely got us closer to an answer, I imagine.
Yeah, it gave us a big clue. You know, now if maybe they're able to piece things together, maybe that'll come in handy. But it seems like at the time, it's such a big clue, and then it just was like a dead end. Like, they just had no way of getting any further, which is so frustrating. For what it's worth, Angie's mom, Marcia, said Rob did everything that could have been done, but she still knew he blamed himself for losing Angie and basically carried this like crushing weight of guilt for not being able to save her. And Marcia said nobody blamed Rob, but she worried that maybe he thought people secretly did blame him for not, you know, doing everything in his power to save her. Rob told interviewers that he still wakes up at night wondering where Angie is, wondering what happened, and wondering if anybody's still looking. He said, you just wonder all the time.
I can't
talk about like a traumatic
unimaginable.
No. Yeah. So like I said, this case was featured in Unsolved Mysteries, and some viewers, this is where it gets kind of interesting, modern day, so to speak, in the Reddit forums and all that good stuff, because some people have had some trouble or like red flags with this whole story. So one person in response to this Unsolved Mysteries episode said, quote, if Rob's story is true, then the guy was more than lucky. He was daring to take someone from a phone booth where they could have been talking to police for all he knew, and also skilled to hide his license plate with mud and not getting stopped or drawing suspicion. Driving with one arm and wrestling Angie, killing her in silence, escaping the APB if there was one, not having someone see you in the highway, disposing the body in a way that no one finds it, eliminating the vehicle after the crime, and also not getting any questioning after the police and FBI investigate 1,600 possible hits.
Right.
So that's fair. But on the other hand, like, Clinton, Missouri is about an hour away from the Kansas border. So it could very well have been a Kansas car. And when the police did the search of these 1,600 vehicles, these were Missouri cars that they looked at. Maybe he drove from a different state and they just never even had a chance to locate that car.
Did the police ever even look at past county lines or state lines?
No, I think they were just looking in Missouri, at cars in Missouri. And, you know, he said, like, oh, he would have gotten so lucky to not be investigated. But you hear stories all the time of people who were, when police do question the person who did it, and they just let them go because there's not.
Yeah.
They just passed the test. There's nothing to hold them. And it's like, oh, you just asked them a few questions. They answered with the right answers. Didn't seem like it was the guy. So, you know, got to let him go. So maybe he was, maybe they were closer than they thought. You know, you never know. And so, you know, it could have been like, there are a number of states nearby. So it really would be kind of an impossible task to look at every, you know, green truck in like the number of states surrounding Missouri.
I guess so.
So, you know, it's another red flag some people have is why Rob and Angie both noticed such specific details about the truck but didn't see the license plate. And that's something you had asked.
Yeah.
And the theory that people, you know, defending this case, or the theory people on the other side of this argument have, is maybe the plate was obscured by mud. If this were like a dirty truck that, you know,
I feel like it was on purpose used, that it was covered.
And it could have very well been intentional. Exactly.
Otherwise, so, like that Redditor said, so lucky it was perfectly caked on.
Perfectly covered. Exactly. Like, very strange. And so that's the other theory, is like, he probably hid the license plate if he was smart at all.
Yeah.
And finally, one person in a forum tried to figure out why Angie would call Rob from only a few blocks away instead of just driving back to his house. You know, if she were only 7 blocks away and they were going to hang out that night anyway, why didn't she go straight to his house? There's really no way to know that. I mean, he was babysitting his brother. Maybe she didn't want to bother them. Like, who knows she did that.
Maybe you said it earlier, but where was this actual phone booth? Like, was it like just completely by itself, or I'm thinking like it's like a 7-Eleven parking lot.
Let me check what the description was. It's the center of town. Just a phone booth in the center of town.
I feel like that means like some, there could have been a witness, but I guess it was 11:30 at night. So
yeah,
there's...
and it's a small town, so it's hard to say. But yeah, there could be somebody may have seen something that they don't even realize is important, you know, or relevant.
Yeah.
Especially if this guy was circling the block over and over again, you know, either could have like, been somebody who spotted it.
You know, it's just to make it creepier. In my mind this whole time, he was circling the block and there were like other people on the street. But if it was like a lone road by himself, mm-hmm. and he was just doing donuts and you're the only person to see it, that does feel weird. It feels like he wants you to see him.
Intentional.
Like he's baiting you or something.
And it's frustrating because, like, you know, obviously hindsight is 20/20, but like if she had been like, this guy's circling the block, I'm getting in my car and driving away, it's like, oh, this could have been maybe avoided. But again, like, you know, you
can't maybe not.
He
would have just chased you down.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Like, there's no way to even say that. It's just, I'm sure this is what Rob's brain goes through every
day.
Time
yeah.
he thinks about it. Just very, very scary, you know. And again, like, read that book. It's a great book. And it just helps you kind of understand why sometimes your subconscious knows better how to keep you safe.
Yeah.
So let's see what else. The question about why she was calling him, we may never know unless Angie is found alive, you know. But like with any unsolved case, everyone's left with more questions than answers, which I think frustrates you and I quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So over the years, people reported sightings of Angie in several states, even as far away as Canada, but there have been no solid leads. And in an interview, Angie's mom urged anyone with information to put themselves in her place and come forward. She said, even if the guy who took her sees this, if he would just call and let us know what he did with her. You know, I think any sense of closure would be a benefit to them at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's bad news.
Yeah.
So on April 14th, 2021,
that's not too long ago.
A little bit over a year ago, a Springfield, Missouri newspaper published an article on the case alleging that the abduction was not a random opportunistic attack, but was planned all along. Now, this is where things get a little topsy-turvy here, because the current police captain suspects that Angie might have been mistaken with another Angela.
Oh, shit.
Whose father was an undercover informant busting up significant drug rings.
Oh, and, God.
Yeah, his theory is that perhaps they were targeting Angela, like a hitman was targeting Angela, but got the wrong Angela, thinking, oh, this is the daughter of that guy who's a police informant, but really it was a different Angela. And the informant, who also had a daughter named Angela, received a freaking letter made of cut-out magazines threatening his daughter, and it was postmarked the day that Angie was abducted.
Oh shit.
So like
talk about a theory. Wow.
Somehow that just got totally slipped through the cracks until 2021.
Can you imagine other Angela like now probably having heard that theory, being like, oh, I wonder what kind of survivor's guilt she's got of like, it was supposed to be me.
I was
or
in the right
could
place.
Have been me. Ugh.
Yeah, just the name mix up is so spooky. And I mean, I remember I covered a story about like, remember that story where it was like multiple women named like Susan were attacked?
Oh, yeah.
And it turns
there was like three
out,
Susans or
three
something.
Three Susans. And it turns out like the hitman just got the wrong Susans. Oh my God. So it reminds me of that. But yeah, so the informant received this like cliche, like I'm going to send you a picture of it, letter made from cutout magazine letters threatening his daughter, who was also named Angela. So I'm going to send you this photo. Okay. And you can definitely post this on Instagram as well. Okay, let me send this to the group. And I'm going to read it.
Okay.
Just sent it. It says, hello, we know who you are. Some of the lines have been redacted. You can see it.
Yeah.
Hello, we know who you are. People like you deserve what you get. We know where your foxy daughter is at. She will see us soon. Tell blank she has our deepest sympathy in her further loss. Goodbye. And this was postmarked April 4th, 1991, the exact date of Angie's disappearance, and sent to this informant who had a daughter named Angela. So there's a very striking theory that
oh, hell
this
yeah.
could have been the target, and it was just a mix-up, and they got the wrong girl. And somehow this was overlooked for decades until, like, last year. And recently, an anonymous caller contacted investigators about the case, and they're hoping to hear more from the caller to chase a lead. And police promised the caller they can protect their identity. So I think this is a good sign, because it shows, like, they're taking this really seriously, and they're trying to keep this person's information private so that they can follow up on this lead. So I'm really hoping that means they're going to, you know, be able to bring some closure to this case. Investigators released this letter to social media, hoping to renew interest in the case, trigger people's memories, say, you know, if you have any sort of connection to this, even if you saw something and you don't realize what you may have seen. I was like, Blaze, did your grandparents live there in 1991? And he was like, no. I was like, damn it. I was about to call them and say, what did you see?
Yeah, but truly. Like, what did you hear? Who did you talk to?
Anything.
Did you know an Angela? Like,
yeah. Any green trucks? Fishermen? Yeah. Anything? Oy. Oy, so, oy, oy. One investigator on the case said that in 2021, which was nearly 30 years to the day after Angie's disappearance, they said, quote, this has not been a cold case ever as far as I'm concerned, and it's not going to be. Good. So I'm really hoping they're able to put some answers out there and, you know, get some closure for the family and for Rob. And there's a quote in this article, too, that says, when she screamed, this is Rob, when she screamed at me out the window, I put it in reverse and started chasing him. So just like how close he was. I mean, it's just,
I mean,
chilling.
He was close enough. He could hear her. And like, I'm sure I can't even imagine. I'm sure her fucking, that was the last time he ever heard her. And it probably is in his head every second.
I didn't even think of that.
That poor fucking guy.
I know. I mean, at age
and poor
18,
Angela too, by the way.
Sure, of course.
But like, that poor guy who like just had to like just go to work the next day and pretend like nothing was going on.
It's horrific. Just age 18 to have that be like your defining trauma for the rest of your life. You know,
I was going to say like developmentally, like, and you haven't even really started like your passage into like relationships. And now every relationship, like I can't imagine how overprotective he probably is of people he cares about.
Yeah. That must be a long lasting fear.
Yeah. God.
So you know what, a man with a mustache, beard, wearing glasses, overalls, driving like a greenish yellow Ford pickup from 1969 or 1970 with a window decal of a fishing scene. This was the year 1991. If you're like, hey, my grandpa had that truck,
he's certainly like, it sounds like he's at least grandpa age now if he's still here. So I mean, that was 30 years ago and he was already a seemingly a grown man. So
yeah, exactly. And if it's anywhere nearby, you know, Missouri or Kansas or any of the other surrounding states, just, you know, if you're like, I recognize that decal,
maybe everyone go ask your grandpa and uncle, like, what kind of car did you what kind of color truck did you drive in the 90s if you lived in the Midwest, you know?
Don't mind this clipboard. I'm just taking notes for my own personal.
don't mind my phone on speakerphone with the current chief of
police. Yeah. Don't mind me listening to it. And that's why we drink in the background as they tell me to interrogate my poor grandpa.
Yeah, exactly. Boy.
Anyway, so it's just another tragedy. And I'm always a little bit, I don't know, pepped up when there's like a really recent update. Cause yeah, you know, maybe, you know, after the Somerton Man thing and the Golden State Killer, I'm like, you know, anything's possible.
There's hope. There's definitely hope.
So that is the case of Angela Hammond.
Wow. I am mad that I didn't have a theory for you. I feel like usually when you say unsolved mystery, I'm like prepared to try to crack the case. But
it's
hard
because there really wasn't anything, you know? It's like this guy showed up.
Just randomly stole a girl, but maybe not so randomly.
And we heard nothing. Nothing seemed to be relevant. So anyway, that's that.
Wow. Wow. Well, thanks, I guess.
You're so welcome.
How is your tummy feeling?
It's okay. I only ate half of my chocolate because I don't want to overdo it, you know?
Right, okay. You're starting to sound like RJ whenever he eats chocolate with his healthy belly. He's like,
eats one piece of dark chocolate. He's like, a little treat for me.
I'm stuffed. Yeah.
Little baking chocolate, like 95% cocoa. It's like,
he texted me knowing that I would still be awake at 4 a.m. and he was up just because and walking his dog. And I was
up
like,
early, not like staying up, right? Like he went to bed and woke
no,
up.
He goes to bed at like a normal hour.
Okay, and, I see.
And I was, and he, but he wakes up at an abnormal hour right. because he like goes swimming for fun at 5 a.m. and shit. So, but he texted me walking his dog and I was like, why are you, I know why I'm awake. Why are you awake? And he was like, oh, just for fun. And I'm like, something's wrong.
Something is, you need a brain doctor like, too, RJ.
People think I'm crazy for staying up so late, but like, I'm nowhere near as crazy as you for choosing to wake up that early.
I agree. Like, if you can sleep,
keep going.
Do it. Keep doing it.
I like to sleep. Sometimes I'll wake up after like a full refreshing 8 hours and I'm like, I could keep going. And then I do.
I did that this morning because Blaze was back home from his trip and was like getting up with the baby. And I was like, I can just keep sleeping. And I did. And it was great.
Yeah.
It's the best activity.
I had an excellent nap yesterday. And I and then I checked my alarm clock. And I was like, I mean, I could turn this off and try again later and if I want to wake up then. But I just kept going. Why not?
Why would it was you? A good time. It's Sunday, you know? Sleep
and
in.
It was on this couch right here. It was my first nap on the couch.
Aww.
And damn, was it a comfy sleep.
I gotta say.
Kept going.
You've slept on that couch, I think, at my house, too. So now you got one of your own.
I know. Well, I didn't even fold it out. I slept when it was in couch mode.
In couch mode.
Yeah.
It's a very firm surface. I used to sleep on that too when Leona would nap in her room and I'd sleep on that too. It's a very firm surface. It's a comfortable couch.
A grand old time. We had a couch at the old Pasadena house that we actually brought here when we first moved here and then we ended up selling it. And I still kind of regret it. It was ugly as sin. Like it was the ugliest fucking couch I've ever seen. But damn, the nap factor on that thing was incredible.
Through the roof.
It was over 6 feet long. And so my whole body could lie on it without having to do anything. And all the pillows were like firm, but like snug. And you felt so held and coddled. And you throw a little blanket on, game over. So
now I'm tired.
Okay, well, we'll go then.
Let's go do our after chat for Patreon and complain more about being tired.
Okay, and then we'll take a nap. Or I will.
Okay, great.
You can take care of your baby.
I'll take my baby out of the bathtub.
Oh, yeah. She's probably all pruny now. Okay, and?
That's
why
we
drink.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.